Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to continue with our examination of the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers, subtitled A Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson. This is about an alleged white supremacist conspiracy to murder Nicole Brown Simpson and to frame O.J. Simpson for the murders in order to do a number of things, to split and further erode race relations in the United States, possibly in preparation, or hopefully, according to the conspirators, in preparation for a race war in the United States that would bring the white supremacists to the pinnacles of power. This operation was intended to discredit the judicial system and to alter it, and to discredit law enforcement in general and the LAPD in particular. This was, according to the author's informant, literally a Nazi psyop, a Nazi psychological operation. The elite six-man strike team had an extensive background in the military, covert operations, and law enforcement, and they utilized the most sophisticated equipment with backing from a foreign terrorist group. They utilized law enforcement officers from inside the L.A. legal system, as well as a blood specialist to obtain a sample of O.J.'s blood. They maintained electronic and physical surveillance on O.J.'s place and Nicole's place in order to accomplish this operation, at least according to the informant. And according to the informant, his coming forward was prompted by regret over the Oklahoma City bombing, in which, according to him, some of his kinsmen or fellow white supremacists died. And beyond that, the regret he felt over the loss of life on the part of the children, some of the white children in particular. At the same time, this informant maintained a degree of solidarity and loyalty to his white supremacist comrades in arms, and their identities were carefully disguised by the informant, even when he was breaking the story to the authors. What we're going to look at in this next segment are some of the oblique links between elements of the informant's story. The informant is codenamed Skinner, as are all the other members of this elite white supremacist hit team, and the Oklahoma City bombing, and also some possible connections between the cause group and other incidents and other organizations. Again, cause, the name of this elite white supremacist Nazi hit team or Nazi organization, was called Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforcers. It was an acronym. Many of these segments that I'm going to touch on now will be review from some of the earlier segments. First of all, there is an oblique reference to some of their brethren, quote-unquote, and some intelligence that they had performed vis-a-vis an FBI infiltrator into their organization that was attempting to destroy the AME church in Los Angeles. The group also, or at least according to Skinner, had murdered Brett Cantor, a music producer who refused to promote a white supremacist band called Rahoa, and indeed O.J.'s defense team had maintained that Brett Cantor's murder was very similar to that of Ron and Nicole. He was almost decapitated with an almost identical knife slash. Returning again to Blood Oath, background of the attempt to unmask an FBI infiltrator who blew the AME operation for this group. Background investigations would have eliminated from a position of confidence the FBI agent who infiltrated the group. He wouldn't have been able to gain access to critical data. As it was, we finally did penetrate his cover with the help of one of our Oklahoma City brethren. They're real sharp. We're going to do something together with them real soon. But his unmasking came too late, only 3 days before the FBI agents. So again, although it's a brief and oblique reference, one of the suspicions that one might indeed obtain from that is that that subsequent operation with the Oklahoma City brethren, quote-unquote, was the Oklahoma City bombing. And again, one has to wonder if perhaps Timothy McVeigh was part of a small blind cell like this six-man elite strike team with military backgrounds that, according to Skinner, performed Operation Thunderbolt, the murder of Nicole, and the framing of O.J. The authors also note, although this is certainly peripheral and by no means definitive, the similarity in the armaments that were issued to members of this strike team and the weaponry that Tim McVeigh had on his person when he was arrested. The authors write, from our research of the Oklahoma bombing, we found a common thread of belief running through the paramilitary extremist group responsible for the bombing, and the white supremacist Skinner claims are responsible for the murders. It includes violence, racism, distrust, anger, and hate, the very essence of our story. The perpetrators of both acts shared an obsessive belief in the Turner Diaries. By the way, it should be the ostensible perpetrators. Tim McVeigh has not been convicted in Oklahoma City, so I want to qualify the text. This should be the alleged perpetrators of both acts shared an obsessive belief in the Turner Diaries, a copy of which was found in the possessions of both Timothy McVeigh, J. McVeigh, and Terry L. Nichols when they were charged with the bombing. Also found on McVeigh at his arrest were a large fixed-bladed knife and a .45 caliber Glock military assault pistol Model 21 with a black talon impact-expanding bullet in the chamber and two 13-round clips of hardball or high-velocity ammunition. These were the same weapons issued by the deliverer to Skinner and his team of kinsmen. We've also pointed out that Dennis Mahone, one of the individuals being pursued by Stephen Jones, McVeigh's attorney, in connection with his contention that there was a white supremacist conspiracy to blow up Oklahoma City, which is exactly what Skinner is maintaining. With regard to Dennis Mahone, a white supremacist Ku Klux Klan organizer who was using his White Knights group, or was recruiting for his White Knights group among the LAPD, and in fact, it was the contention of the members of the strike team that Mahone's efforts were much more successful than the authorities had acknowledged, and that indeed some of these recruits were deeply involved with Operation Thunderbolt, the murder of Nicole, and the framing of O.J., of Dennis Mahone and his recruiting in LAPD. And again, this is by way of review. On Saturday, April 20th of 1991, the Los Angeles Times published an article entitled "Klan's Attempt to Recruit Police Probed." The White Knights, a faction of the, the Kansas City, Missouri Ku Klux Klan, were actively recruiting members of the Los Angeles Police Department. The leader of the White Knights, the Imperial Dragon Dennis Mahone, was quoted from a telephone interview, quote, "Recruitment applications had been mailed to several LAPD divisions, to individual officers at the stations, and to some officers' homes," unquote. He stated that he had received about 50 responses from officers asking for more information. A handful returned filled-in applications. Moreover, he said if, quote, "they, cops, see, quote, see Police Chief Daryl Gates hammered, you're going to see a lot of guys join up," unquote. Mahone was alluding to the demand that Gates should resign after the beating of Rodney King by four white officers. Mahone, who has an office and followers in Tulsa, Oklahoma, made the following chilling statement. "We're the most violent Klan in America, and we are trained in counterinsurgency," unquote. Continuing his recruitment in November of 1991, Dennis Mahone traveled to an area near Königswusterhausen in Germany to organize German skinheads. In a speech he bellowed, quote, "Race, nation, family, Sieg Heil." Well known to all were a series of trials in Los Angeles following the riots and their accompanying investigations. Equally publicized was the resignation of Police Chief Daryl Gates. And so again, note that Mahone was recruiting among L.A. law enforcement, and according to Skinner and his compatriots, he was much more successful than the authorities acknowledged, and some of those recruits were deeply involved with Operation Thunderbolt in terms of the law enforcement contingent collaborating with the elite hit team. More about Mahone and his expression of sympathy for the Oklahoma City bombing. Mahone, currently the head of White Aryan Resistance's chapter in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when questioned about the Oklahoma City bombing massacre, informed Howard Witt, a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, quote, "It was a fine thing. I hate the federal government with a perfect hatred. I'm surprised that this hasn't happened all over the country," unquote. By the way, William Luther Pierce, the head of the National Alliance and the author of the Turner Diaries, also endorsed the Oklahoma City bombing. And indeed, more now about Dennis Mahone and his possible connections with Timothy McVeigh. One of the more promising, talking about coincidences, possibly linking this cause group described to the authors by Skinner and Oklahoma City, one of the more promising coincidences presently being explored involves the Oklahoma City bombing trial of suspect Timothy McVeigh. According to a March 9, 1996 article in the Los Angeles Times, McVeigh's lawyer demands U.S. files on, quote, "Stephen Jones, an attorney for this defendant, asked the federal judge in the case on February 9, 1996, to order the U.S. government to turn over its classified data on several individuals. This list includes Andreas Strassmeier, a German neo-Nazi activist, who reportedly was in a secluded white supremacist Christian identity camp in Elohim City. In Elohim City, Oklahoma, on the day of the bombing, and to whom the crime's primary suspect, Timothy McVeigh, placed several calls several days before. Also on the list was Dennis Mahone, the former Ku Klux Klan leader, now Oklahoma director of the White Aryan Resistance. This is the very same Dennis Mahone who, in 1992, solicited the LAPD for membership in the White Knights, possibly recruiting Mark Furman, and who spoke about how violent his group was. The classified data was collected in a massive federal investigation by the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and the White House Situation Room that occurred in the aftermath of the bombing. Attorney Jones has also asked the judge to subpoena John Timbal, David Irving, Charles Sargent, members of the far-right British National Party, and Dennis Mahone. Among other topics, Jones wishes to question the three Britons about a detonator allegedly supplied to Mr. Mahone that may have been used in the bombing. And by the way, the international connections to the Oklahoma City investigation were discussed at considerable length in the aforementioned series, Specialized Knowledge and Abilities that You Can Obtain from Spitfire. And I hope we'll give the address if I have time again at the end of this particular segment. So again, note the possible connections of Dennis Mahone to the Oklahoma City situation and Timothy McVeigh. Again, the alleged links between this cause group, as described to the authors, and Oklahoma City are circumstantial. However, in light of Skinner's disclosures and the many other aspects of his story which appear to check out, I think that this should be seriously investigated. We're also going to review a section now about Stephen Garrett Colburn, an acquaintance of McVeigh, initially arrested in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, eventually released and not indicted in connection with that, but currently apparently facing prosecution on a weapons charge, which may, and an individual, by the way, who may have been connected to the AME church attack or abortive church attack, which was one of the group's earlier planned and failed operations, and which to which he may have been supplying weapons. Now, again, the, quote, Colby, unquote, the blood and DNA specialist who was a part of this operation and who supplied a sample of O.J.'s blood to the conspirators, got that blood while he apparently was working, according to Skinner, working at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. And again, his code name was Colby. Returning to Blood Oath, we read, in Chapter 2, A Foundation of Doubts, a number of minor anomalies, reasonable doubts, and the facts of the murder investigation and the trial were described. As this book neared completion, it became more and more clear that these minor facts, in addition to certain stories in the news regarding the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, white supremacists, and the Oklahoma bombing of April 1995, seemed destined to be part of a larger story. More and more, we came to wonder if they were just odd coincidences. The next three sections of this chapter feature recent news stories about persons linked to these seemingly disparate events. The final portion of this chapter represents transcripts from the trial. We believe the transcripts shed light on some of the reasonable doubts raised in Chapter 2. And by the way, I would interject that for those people who do believe that there was a good case against O.J. Simpson, I suggest that they read these reasonable doubts. It's a very modest appellation for these particular things. I will state without qualification what I've stated almost from the beginning, that what O.J. Simpson was alleged to have done is physically impossible for one person under those circumstances, and I will stand on that. When a person has a carotid artery cut, it's a bloody, bloody mess. And supposedly he had a watch cap and a snugly fitting glove torn off his person in mortal combat with a strong young man who was a professional tennis instructor and weightlifter. No way. Impossible. One of the sad things about this case is, I shouldn't say sad. One of the things that disturbed me most about the O.J. Simpson case is I had never realized how few people can think. Anybody who could think could really would have grasped that it was impossible for O.J. Simpson to have done what he was alleged to have done. Most people just can't think, or perhaps they simply didn't examine the case very closely and relied on the news media for their conclusions, and the news media behaved shamefully. Indeed, I think the real villains, at least as bad as the killers themselves, were the news media in this case. I think they and the DA's office couldn't be castigated strongly enough. They, in many ways, are the real villains of the O.J. Simpson case, in my opinion. Again, this is not to excuse what the cause hit team did in any way, but a decent law enforcement system and a decent media infrastructure would have at least reported the truth. It certainly could not have averted the deaths of Ron and Nicole, but all that has followed would have been cleared up by a decent legal and media establishment. Continuing with the text here of the authors, the particulars of the recent news story stand out as being very coincidental. Two of the subject of the stories are little known. The name of the subject of the third has become a household word. There are more facts to be aware of concerning these people. You be the judge of their relevance. Just as the Oklahoma bombing was the catalyst for our informant coming forward, coincidentally, it was also the catalyst for the arrest of Stephen Garrett Colburn, 35, alias Bill Carson. Colburn had been employed as a DNA research associate at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center from mid-1993 through October of 1994. It was during that time that O.J. Simpson had surgery there. Colburn was arrested by federal marshals on Friday, May 12th of 1995. Mr. Colburn failed to appear in court on October 21st for a July 20, 1994 weapons charge that involved the seizure of a knife, an assault rifle, a silencer, and two loaded pistols, one of which was a 9mm. The seizure took place in Upland, California on Route 83, less than 10 miles from the Chino Airport, where a couple with the last name Nadal kept a very strange airplane. Christian and Doris Nadal lived in North Hills, California, about 10 miles north of the scene of the murders in Brentwood. They were involved in the bombing plot of the First AME Church of Los Angeles and maintained an airplane with a swastika on its tail at the Chino Airport. Colburn is known to have expressed pro-Nazi sympathies with references to the, quote, Third Reich, unquote, and was extremely anti-Semitic. He held a hatred of women, Mexicans, and non-whites alike. U.S. Marshals described Colburn as armed, dangerous, and trained in survival skills. When arrested in Oatman, Arizona, he kicked a marshal in the jaw and attempted to reach for a gun and knife in his back pocket. The trailer he lived in was searched and revealed several cases of ammunition, including cases holding link belt rounds for machine guns along with cases of handgun and rifle bullets. Colburn admitted knowing Timothy McVeigh, the accused Oklahoma City bomber. On July 17, 1993, in an article entitled "More Suspects Sought in White Supremacist Plot," unquote, the L.A. Times reported that investigators for the AME case, quote, are trying to trace those weapons which may lead them to additional suspect sources said, unquote. The weapons in question were dozens of machine guns, revolvers, sawed-off shotguns, bayonets, and pipe bombs. The agents also discovered stolen medical supplies and some very interesting paperwork, unquote. Colburn frequently traveled back and forth between Bullhead, Arizona, and Los Angeles using routes 10, 15, and 40. Route 10 runs very close to Chino, while Route 40 runs directly through Barstow, both on their way to Los Angeles. Could Colburn have been Colby, or was Colby a clever code name standing for the West Los Angeles Police Station, located at 1663 South Butler, bordering Colby Avenue? Again, according to Skinner's account, the blood specialist had been one of the weapons suppliers for the AME plot, and there is at least circumstantial evidence suggesting the possibility. Note the term possibility that Stephen Colburn, an admitted acquaintance of Timothy McVeigh, may have been the blood specialist and the weapons supplier. Again, that is by anything but conclusive. That's what I refer to as food for thought and grounds for further research. Some other events that have taken place since the murders of Ron and Nicole are also discussed by the authors, and they discuss the possibility that some of these things might have been connected with the murders of Ron and Nicole, Operation Thunderbolt. Included in the possible links is the derailing of a Sunset Limited Amtrak train in Hyder, Arizona, going back to Blood Oath. Was it another coincidence that the July 1995 issue of Taking Aim, the nationally distributed newsletter of the militia of Montana, referred to police as local Gestapo, and then on October 9th, exactly 2 years after that first meeting of cause, a westbound transcontinental Amtrak train, the Sunset Limited, was sabotaged in Hyder, Arizona by the Sons of the Gestapo, or SOG? This same railway links Barstow with Los Angeles and with one of O.J. Simpson's previous play spots, Miami, Florida. An additional coincidence? Perhaps. But what about the Navy SEAL knife that Skinner claimed was the murder weapon? We were able to trace it back to its manufacturer, SOG Specialty Knives. SOG Special Operations Group, SOG Sons of Gestapo. One more chance occurrence. And again, note that this attack occurred on the second anniversary of what Skinner said was the forming of cause. I would also note that at a militia meeting, a militia convention earlier in 1995, the need for tracking the rate of speed, times of arrival, and so forth for Amtrak trains was discussed. And again, for those people, I've indicated my feelings concerning the militias as a mixed bag, but for those people who maintain that they're just a bunch of Boy Scouts and that there's nothing wrong with any of them, there's no conceivable innocent motive for tracking the rates of speed and times of arrival of Amtrak trains. Amtrak's about as benign as anything one could think of. Still more about the derailing of the Amtrak train. By the way, there's a three-part miscellaneous series about the Amtrak derailing called The Sons of the Gestapo. The Amtrak derailing and other things, other related topics. In a Wednesday, October 11th, 1995, Los Angeles Times Home Edition article, Attack on Amtrak, Jesse Katz interviewed Leonard Hall, a longtime resident of Hyder. He offered a racially motivated explanation for the sabotage that he attributed to white supremacists who were angry over O.J.'s recent acquittal. "Everything that happens from now on is connected to O.J.," unquote, said Hall, who was wearing a baseball cap that features farm animals in flagrante delicto and the motto Barnyard Romance. In the world of publishing, a most interesting coincidence was unveiled with the release of Steven Singular's explosive Legacy of Deception, an investigation of Mark Furman and racism in the LAPD by Dove Books in December of 1995. And again, there is considerable degree of overlap between Legacy of Deception and some of the things presented in this particular book. I did a three-part interview with Steven Singular, the author of Legacy of Deception, and also a six-segment excerpting of the book Legacy of Deception. Those are available from Spitfire. Again, another possible coincidence concerns Mark Furman moving up to Sandpoint, Idaho to retire about the same time that Louis Beam moved there as well. Louis Beam was one of the defendants in a 1988 alleged conspiracy to blow up the Oklahoma Federal Building. That also involved members from the Order, including Louis Beam, a founding member of the Order that assassinated Allen Berg. I would also note that his attorney in that trial was Kirk Lyons, the attorney for Andreas Strassmeyer, the son of Gunter Strassmeyer, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, or former chief of staff, I should say, and one of the security people at the Elohim City compound that McVeigh called a couple of weeks before the Oklahoma City bombing, whether or not McVeigh was involved. Strassmeyer admits knowing McVeigh, but doesn't want to talk about the situation. I would also note that the director of Elohim City, a fellow named Robert Millar, claimed the body of Richard Snell, a white supremacist who was executed for murdering a pawnbroker whom he thought was Jewish, and a black Arkansas state trooper. Snell was also one of the defendants in the 1988 conspiracy. The security director for Elohim City, or one of them, was James Ellison, who was the government witness against those alleged conspirators. The trial fell apart because he was such a weak witness. One wonders whether perhaps he was a deliberately weak witness. Note also that after his conviction, Wayne Snell said to the judge, "Look over your shoulders, justice is coming." And in the March 1995 issue of Taking Aim, the newsletter of the militia of Montana, headed up by an Aryan Nations associate named John Trockman, the newsletter warns that on April 19th of 1995, Richard Snell will be executed, quote, "unless we take action," unquote. Again, that's by no means conclusive, but I don't think one should too readily dismiss a possible connection between the Oklahoma City bombing and that cryptic warning in the March 1995 newsletter of the militia of Montana. I would also note that Kirk Lyons, the attorney who acted as a go-between between Andreas Strassmeyer and his father, Gunter Strassmeyer, is also the head of a white supremacist legal foundation, which is named, perhaps coincidentally or perhaps not, Cause. Returning once again to Blood Oath. One last coincidence. We have found irrefutable evidence that a white supremacist organization using the name Cause exists. In the January 1994 edition of Stormfront magazine, the founder of the Cause Foundation was interviewed in an article entitled ACLU for Patriots, unquote. Kirk Lyons, a young Dallas, Texas attorney, founded the organization in 1989 as the Patriots Defense Organization. Lyons has since changed the name of his organization and moved to the mountains of North Carolina. There, he continues to provide legal services to such, quote, patriot, unquote, causes as the Fort Smith, Arkansas sedition trials, the Randy Weaver case at Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and the Branch Davidian massacre in Waco, Texas. The Stormfront article applauds Lyons' go-for-the-throat style in his efforts in, quote, sending shivers down the spines of federal officials and teaching them new lessons in old-fashioned constitutional law. And again, I do not hold a brief for what the federal government did at Waco or for what they did to Randy Weaver. I don't think though one could compare the Branch Davidians and their views with Randy Weaver. Randy Weaver was a white supremacist, although as far as I can tell, he was not hurting anybody. And again, I do not hold a brief for what the federal government did to him, nor do I hold a brief for Randy Weaver. I would also note that it was George Bush's, on George Bush's watch, that was done as well. One last interesting note is that Mark Furman has been suggested as an ideal potential recruit for a leader for militias. And the suggestion comes from, among others, an interesting source. Turning once again to Blood Oath, falling just short of offering him positions, three other national leaders praised him in the same article. This is an article from a tabloid called The National Examiner in September 12th of 1995. Bob Fletcher, militia of Montana commandant, stated, quote, he'd be an excellent militia leader, unquote. That of Mark Furman. Bob Fletcher apparently is no longer, at least ostensibly, no longer with the militia of Montana. He has moved instead to Los Angeles, which is a long way from Montana, both geographically and culturally. He apparently, according to news accounts, is involved with setting up media outlets in L.A. Perhaps that's simply a coincidence. Again, note that the militia of Montana, one of its main people, the head at least at one point, is John Trockman, an affiliate of the Aryan Nations. Note that their March 1995 newsletter warned that on April 19th, Richard Snell, a white supremacist killer who was involved in the alleged 1988 plot to blow up Oklahoma City with Louis Beam, represented by Kirk Lyons, the March 1995 newsletter warned that Richard Snell will be executed unless we take action. Again, I'm not necessarily casting aspersions on Bob Fletcher. Don't know the man. Perhaps he's a saint. On the other hand, it's interesting that he moved from Montana to Los Angeles. That, again, is a long way geographically and culturally, and it was in Los Angeles that the cause group was attempting to foment a race war. Whether there's any connection between that and Bob Fletcher's relocation there, I do not know. And again, I want to make it clear I'm not speaking out against the man. I don't know him personally. However, it does seem like an interesting place for him to move from when he left Montana. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.